It's November the 8th, and we're continuing with our creation class. We're in Parshas Miketz on page 234. We last time discussed Yosef's give and take with the brothers and accusing them of being spies, and how he managed to get them to admit that they have another brother. They actually have two other brothers. One of them is gone and one of them is at home. And then Yosef tells them that he still accuses them of being spies, and the only way that they can prove that they are not liars is to bring Binyamin down. And first, he tells them that he's going to lock them up, and they should send one of them to go get their brother. So let's read from there. And then, of course, as we know, he changed the deal and said, you can all go except for one. One has to stay back. So let's start from Tezva 15. Mezos tibochenu, with this you will be tested. Chein Faro, I swear by the life of Paro, and I mentioned last time Rashi really says it, that any time he was swearing falsely, he would swear by the life of Paro. So, I swear by the life of Paro, im teitz umizeh, if you will go out of here, ki im bevo achichem akoton heina, only if your youngest brother comes here. That's the only way you'll ever get out. Shilchumi kemechad, send from you one. V'yikaches achichem, and take your brother. V'atem, and you, hey asru, you will be locked up. V'yibachanu divreichem, and your words will be tested. Ha'emes itchem, whether the truth is with you. V'yimlo, and if not, chei faro, I swear by the life of Paro, ki miraglim atem, that you are spies. V'yasofo sam el mishmar shloshes yomim, and he gathered them into under guard for 3 days. Now, interestingly, as we pointed out last time, we don't find that they explicitly rejected his offer. He says, send one from you to get your other brother, and you stay here in jail. We don't find that they explicitly rejected his offer, nor do we find that he gave them an option. It just says he locked them up for 3 days. Some commentaries do say that that's implicit over here, even though it's not explicit, that they were refusing his offer, which is why he locked them up. But that the psukim don't actually say that. Vayomer alehem Yosef vayom hashlishi, Yosef said to them on the third day, Zos asu vichyu, this do, and you will live. Es ho Elokim ani arei, I fear Elokim, and we mentioned last time Elokim is not Hashem's name of Yud Kei Vav Kei, but rather it's the name that means the power. That the power that is the greatest power of the universe, I fear that power. So here he tells them, I fear Elohim, and it seems that as a result of fearing Elohim, he's going to give them another option. So he gave them option number one, which is stay here and send one. Now, because I fear Elohim, I'm going to give you another option. Im keinim atem, if you're truthful, then achichem echad yeyaseh beveis mishmarchem, your one brother will remain in your house of guard, under guard. Ve'atem l'chu haviu, and you go and bring shever ra'avon bateichem, the food for the hunger of your houses. Ve'ez hachichem akaton toviu eloi, and your little brother you'll bring to me. Ve'yamnu divreichem, and your words will be proven true. V'lo samus, and you will not die. V'yasuchein, and they did this. It seems they agreed to do this. Now, before we turn the page, let's understand what was going on here with these two different possibilities of how to handle the situation. First of all, in both formulas call for separating one from the rest of the group. In the first formula, one will go back and everybody else stays behind. In the second formula, one stays behind and the rest will go back. I did see that one of the commentaries wants to suggest in the first formula, in Pasuk Tezayin 16, Shilchumi Kemechad, send from you one, that Yosef didn't even mean to send one of the brothers. He meant send a messenger, send an agent, one of your servants. I would suggest it does not seem to be that that is the simple reading of the pasuk. The simple reading of the pasuk seems to imply that you should send one of you, one of the brothers, should go back and bring Binyamin. What is the purpose of sending one and leaving 11 behind? Well, let me ask it differently. In the second formula, where he sends 11 and leaves one behind, what's the purpose of leaving one behind? Why not send all 12 to get Binyamin? So, you say, as a hostage, if I hold on to one, you're going to have to come back. So, that's good if it wasn't for the fact that Yosef had a commodity that they needed.
Food.
He had food. If Yosef doesn't give them enough food to last for the next 5 years,
see if they will have, strong feelings about protecting him instead of giving up on him.
So then we know that's what Yosef's trying to set up. He's trying to set up a similar test to what happened in the past. But we have to have two levels here. We have to have what is it that he was trying to get make them think were his motives, and then what were his real motives. So what was he trying to make them think were his motives, assuming that he's really the viceroy of Egypt and no more and no less? He's not Yosef, and he's just giving them trouble thinking that they're spies. So why keep one behind? So the simple answer is as a hostage. So my question was, well, if it's for a hostage, then that would be to make sure they come back, but we know they're going to come back because they need food. Well, it could be anyway that he wants to hold on to them, because if they're in fact trying to infiltrate Mitzrayim and start a war or attack with an army, if he holds on to one of them, that will, or maybe hold on to 11 of them, that will dissuade them from attacking, because he could always hold this person hostage to be killed if they'll do anything. It's still a little bit far-fetched that he'd be suspicious that they would actually bring an army against Mitzrayim right now. Mitzrayim was very powerful. It's hard to believe that he was worried about that happening at this moment. So, holding on to the one brother has to have, I would think, more than just the hostage factor. So there is another reason, other than that, why it's crucial for him to hold on to one or more of the brothers. Remember, what's the test over here to see if they're telling the truth?
Is it Shula?
No. What is the? I'm not talking about what is his real motive. I'm talking about what is he telling them? The test is bring your brother. Bring your brother. Bring the youngest brother. Now, how is he going to know if this youngest brother is one of their brothers? So we mentioned last time that all of Yaakov's children were strong and powerful, so it's going to be hard to find someone to pose as the 12th brother. But theoretically, they could find somebody. So how does Yosef avoid that problem? So if he keeps one behind, or more than one behind, then he can keep them separate, and he can give each one the third degree without letting the other ones know what's happening over here. Right? He can let's say
what your brother looks like.
Right, exactly. Let's say six go back and get the quote unquote 12th brother. Mm. And four remain with Yosef. So then, when they come back with this mystery person, who is supposed to be Binyamin, and he's 6 feet tall, and he's powerful, and he has dark eyes and light hair, and he, what color is his beard? There are ways that he can then test the other four and see if they know what this person is supposed to look like. He could even give this quote-unquote Binyamin person, mm-hmm. the third degree, where are you from, what's your wife's name, how many children do you have, etc., 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 and
what
then...
What do your brothers look like?
What?
What do your other brothers?
What do your other brothers look like, the other four that are with me, how many other brothers do you have, right? So if he keeps some behind, at least one behind, he's able to do this. He's able to test one person's word against the other person's word. So he needs to keep some people, not just as hostages, which could be the case, it could be the hostage factor, but even more important than the hostage factor, it's to prove that this 12th person actually is Binyamin. Now the question is, once he has to keep somebody behind, how many does he keep? Does he keep 11? Well, actually, he shouldn't say 11. There are only 10 here. Does he keep 9 and send 1? Does he keep 1 and send 9? Does he keep 5 and send 5? Like, how many does he do? So first he says, I'm going to keep 9 and send 1. Then he changes it to, I'll keep 1 and send 9. Now, there's no question that in terms of the safety of Mitzrayim, if he's worried about an invasion, keeping 9 and sending 1 is the safest thing to do. The more that you keep, the fewer of these powerful people are you letting free to go muster an army and attack Mitzrayim. So,
excuse me,
yeah.
Are you talking from Joseph's point of view, or from what the brothers think?
What he wants them to think.
Okay.
Right, what he wants them to think. So if he keeps 9 and sends 1, that certainly is the safest thing to do. He's got to keep some and send some, but he also wants to protect Mitzrayim. So the most logical thing to do for a person in Yosef's position would be to keep as many as possible and send as few as possible. Send 1, keep 9. And that's what he does. That's what he tells them. And then he locks them up for 3 days. Now, you can go either way. Either they refused. They said, no, we don't want to do that. Could be that they're afraid to send 1. It's dangerous to travel by yourself. They don't want to send 1. They're afraid of what Yaakov's reaction is going to be if 1 shows up and 9 are left behind. It was bad enough to have 9 show up and 1 left behind. Imagine only one comes home. So they don't want to send him, so they refuse, which the Pesukim don't tell us, but we could say that's the fine print. Or he doesn't give them a choice. He just says, that's what we're going to do. And first he locks them up to let them stew in it for a while. Either way, he comes back to them after 3 days, and he says, I've changed my mind. I fear Elohim. I fear Elohim. So I've changed my mind. Now, what is it about the fear of Elohim that makes him change his mind? What changes? He doesn't change the fact that he's demanding they bring Binyamin down. He doesn't change the fact that he keeps some and lets some go. That doesn't change. It's just the amount of people that he lets go. What is it about his fear of Elohim that should change keeping 9 and letting 1 go to keeping 1 and letting 9 go?
It strikes me almost like, I never thought of this before, like a nekama, like taking revenge. He doesn't have the right to do, if he were to take any kind of revenge, the most he could do would be have another brother be locked up and send the rest out.
But you're moving into his real motivation. I want to know what he's making them think. Okay. What are they thinking? You go ahead.
Is it possible that he would give them food for their families and show that he fears them?
Okay. So the fear of Elohim is that he says, because if you look what he says. He says, Pasuk Yud Ches, 18. Vayom Alehem Yosef, Vayom Ashlish Yosef said to them on the third day, Zos Asu Vichyu, this you should do and live. Mm. What do you mean and live? Who's talking about dying over here? Nobody. He didn't threaten them with execution. That didn't happen yet.
But there's a rav.
But there's a famine. That's the fear. Oh. So this is what you should do and live. Esho Elohim Ani Arei, I fear Elohim. Therefore, im keini matem, if you're telling the truth, achichem echad, I'll only keep one of your brothers, ye'aser beveis mishmarachem, he'll remain in jail, ve'atem, and the rest of you, l'chu ha'viu, go and bring shever avon batechem, the food for the hunger of your houses. That's what's changed. He lets them think about this for 3 days, how, what's going to happen to our families? Remember, Yosef doesn't know that they still had food at home. So, as far as Yosef knows, they're desperate, they need food. And here he's going to keep 9 of them locked up, only giving 1 chance to go home, and then the trip all the way home, all the way back, all the way home again with the food. By then, you could have serious consequences. You could have mass starvation. They could come back to having, many of them have already died of starvation, many of their family members. This is a terrifying thing. So Yosef lets them stew in that for 3 days, and then he tells them, but you know what, I fear Elohim. I've thought about it, I don't want to do it this way because I want to protect your families, so I'm only going to keep one of you, let 9 of you go back, and this way you can bring the food for your families. Yeah?
I was just going to say, while they were stewing over it for 3 days, he was also. And it could be that that's when he realized.
But so you're suggesting he himself changed his mind after 3 days?
Yeah, he thought about what he's going to do.
It could be you're right. I suspect that this was his plan the whole time. He has this all orchestrated. Remember, he's planned this out. He knew what was going to happen. He had this all, he, for 2 years, maybe for 9 years, he's been ready, he's been waiting to spring the trap on his brothers.
Mm-hmm. Not for 2 years.
2 years of the famine, 7 years of the years of plenty. So it's been 9 years since he's out of jail. So he's been planning. He's been plotting. He's getting it all set up. He's orchestrating something over here.
When he gets out of jail, why does he try to go home?
Well, he wasn't given a choice to go home. Paro conscripted
him.
Well,
but then he became, big...
Macher.
Macher, yeah.
He became a big macher.
Was he able to make,
So we've asked this before, that why didn't he make contact with his father? It seems that Yosef understood that it was not appropriate, that because of the dreams, that the dreams had to take place as with him being anonymous. Or at least with him and his brothers being anonymous. It could be that was the point, or it could be he felt this was the only way to bring them to do teshuva. His whole goal now is to set it up that they will do teshuva. That's his whole goal. As we will find at the end of the story, and we all know the dramatic conclusion of this story, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai, Ani Yosef, is my father still alive? That dramatic revelation where the brothers are completely shocked by the revelation, that's what he's leading up to. We've already shown last week that Yosef, although it doesn't appear so from the way he's acting, that he really has their best interests in mind. He's acting as a brother in contrast to the way they acted towards him when he was under their control, that we showed before. So he's got a plan and he's setting it up. Now, yeah.
Is there any relationship with the 3 days? Because with the Sakime Haruga.
Yeah, good, good. Excellent.
From Shaman, mm-hmm.
Good, good.
What Hashem decided for them, they had a way.
Okay, Mrs. Stockman is reminding us that in the story of the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs that we read on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur, when they were told, which was an atonement, which is a kapara for this story, that those 10 had to be killed to atone for the brothers, at that point, when they found out the decree from the Roman general, they were all going to be killed, they asked Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol to find out from heaven whether this was something which they had to accept or whether something they should fight against. And Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol says that he purified himself for 3 days, that's what you're bringing up, and then he uttered the name of God, the name of God that none of us know how to say, that name of God that can do all kinds of things. And by doing so, he was able to leave his body and go upstairs and converse with the angels to find out what was the decree. And he was told, accept it, the decree is that all of you are going to be killed. And he came back downstairs and told all of the rest of them that we have to accept the decree of heaven. So you're asking 3 days... Okay, that's very interesting. It's very interesting. It is 3 days there and 3 days here. I never thought of that. But to consider that possibility, it's very, very interesting. Here, let's think of the elements of what happened over here. The 3 days, the Baal HaTurim says, the reason for 3 days is because they did 3 things to him when they caught him, when they got him. They did 3 things to him. They removed his clothing. They threw him in the pit. And they sold him. Those are the three shameful things they did to him. So now they had to be frightened for 3 days. That's the way the Baal HaTurim says it. But let's think of the different things that are going on over here. The very next verse, which we're up to, the brothers are going to start to have charata. They're going to start to regret what they did. Remember, they did this 22 years ago. So Yosef is trying to get them to think back 22 years. Think about what they did wrong. Many of the Mefarshim say that you see from the brothers how a tzaddik, how a righteous person is supposed to act when bad things happen. That a person is supposed to reflect and think, did I do anything that might deserve this sort of problem? We're not prophets. which means that we can't know for certain why bad things happen. And a bad thing happening, as we've mentioned many times, is frequently not a punishment. It's frequently a test, or it's a way of bringing out our best. It could be for a lot of reasons. It doesn't have to be a punishment. Nevertheless, a person who is connected with Hashem, the first thing to think about is, maybe it is a punishment. Did I do something that perhaps deserves this tsar, this pain? If I can't think of anything which is commensurate to the pain, okay, so then it's for another reason. But a person does have to first take that avenue, and a person certainly has to try to do teshuva, so, because maybe that's the message. So the brothers, for 3 days, they're in jail, and they're afraid for their families, so they're thinking, what did we do? It doesn't make sense. We came down to Egypt with the best intentions in mind. We're doing kibud av. A father told us to bring food. That's a tremendous mitzvah to do what your father wants you to do. So here we're listening to our father. And we also decided to find our brother Yosef. So we're coming here with good intentions. If we came with such good intentions, how come it's all falling? Why is it all being thrown back in our faces? Why every move we've made since we've come to Egypt has been a failure? And now we're being thrown in jail, being threatened, and what do we do? What do we do to deserve this? So they're thinking, and remember, it's going to be tough for them to think that it's as a punishment for selling Yosef, because they've come here already with intention to correct the wrong. Mm. You know, as far as they're concerned, it's like, Hashem, I'm trying to do the right thing. What are you stopping me for? So it's going to take them some work here to decide that the reason why this is happening is because of what they did 22 years ago. So Yosef is trying to get them to think along those lines. So Yosef is trying, as Mrs. Donowitz mentioned, he's trying to, this is what's going on for real, not what he's doing outwardly, but what he's trying to actually do, is he's trying to recreate for them similar circumstances to what he went through. So they're in jail for 3 days. Remember, jail was no picnic there. Where was jail? It was in the ground. They're in a pit for 3 days. Think about being in a pit. Yosef was in a pit. They threw Yosef into a pit.
Was he there for 3 days?
No, Yosef was not there for 3 days. He wasn't there for 3 days. But still, let them stew in that for a while. Let them think about that. The separation of the brothers, sending one, keeping nine, sending nine, keeping one, separating. He was separated from his brothers, separated from their father. That whole idea of not being able to go back, remaining in Egypt, these are things which are meant to bring up in their minds that perhaps this has to do with the sale of Yosef.
I just had a question. But in all those years, they actually had remorse, because I remember reading something about that the time that they did that to Yosef, it was evil inclination. They were like kind of blinded, and they kind of thought they were doing the right thing. So during all those years, when was it that they started realizing?
The Torah does not tell us. They clearly thought they were doing the right thing at the time. At what point during those 22 years did they start to feel that perhaps this was the wrong thing to do? It's not clear to us. It seems that it is the famine that triggered it. Because the very fact that now they have to go down to Egypt, which, as we mentioned 2 weeks ago, it was so striking to them that the only place you can get food is in Egypt, and that's the place we sold Yosef to. It was, to them, it was ironic. And so that started getting them thinking in that direction. So here, Yosef is getting them to, he's recreating for them some of what he went through, make them go through the same thing.
Thank you.
And the fear for their families. The fear for their families. Yosef had fear. Yosef was not married when he was sold, but still the fear for his father, not knowing what's going on. It's a fearful thing to be locked up and not knowing what's happening on the outside world. It's scary. And so he's recreating that for them. And that's why in the next pasuk, on page 236 of Chaf Aleph, verse 21, Vayomru ish elachiv, and they said one man to his brother, Avol ashemim anachnu, in truth, we are sinful. How do they say it? We are guilty. al achinu, on our brother, asher ra'inu tzaras nafsho, that we saw the pain of his soul, bischanenu elenu, when he begged to us, v'lo shamanu, we didn't listen, al kein ba'a elenu, therefore it has come to us, hatzara hazos, this pain, this trouble, because anguish, they say, it's a good word. This anguish comes to us because of what we did to our brother. Yosef's first, the first part of his plan has met with success. His goal was get them to think about the sale. Let them start to make connections between what they did to him and what's happening to them. And he has, it has come off perfectly. They're starting to think, and they say it out loud. They say, one brother says to the other, that it's because our brother begged us, and we ignored his begging, that's why this is happening to us.
And yet, we didn't read that Joseph begged. He did read?
Correct. The Ramban writes that even though it doesn't say that Yosef begged, but that's obvious. Who wouldn't beg in that case? A brother is being sold into slavery, he's being thrown into a pit, whatever happened over there, it goes without saying that a brother will try to get his brothers to be merciful to him. That's what the Ramban says. Now, they don't say that it is because we sold our brother that this is happening to us. They don't say that. They're not regretting the sale of their brother. They still seem to feel that it was correct to sell him. They're regretting the fact that they ignored his pleas. He's begging them, he's crying for mercy, and we didn't listen. Even if you have to punish someone, there's two ways of doing it. You can do it with a heavy hand, and you can do it with a heavy heart. They didn't listen to his begging. That's what they are regretting right now. And the next pasuk, Vayan Ruvain Osam, Leymar, Ruvain answers them saying, Halo amarti aleichem, didn't I say to you, Leymar saying, Al techetu vayeled, don't sin against the lad, v'lo shematem, you didn't listen. V'gam damo hinei nidrash, and also his blood is now being sought out. So Ruvain says, the old, I told you so. Didn't I tell you? Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? And you didn't listen. And now, also his blood is being sought out.
Sought out for his revenge.
Yeah.
Just as a technical question, do we know the kind, you say a hole, you know, what kind of hole? Like, was it a 4x4 pit? Do we know, like, Egyptian history, how they imprisoned their people?
If you mean we, is it historically known? I imagine it is known. We, meaning I, have no idea.
Or, you know, I mean,
was it like,
we don't know.
Yeah, it must have been
a hole is like a hole.
It must have been a deep.
I mean, a square thing where you live for 2-3 days, that's a different story.
I don't know. It must have been a deep pit.
So you can get out.
No, it must have been deep so you can't get out. Yeah.
Why was it, must have been deep?
So they couldn't get out. It was a prison. That was the whole, you know, this is not the only place where you find a prison being a hole in the ground. You
that
find
hole
it.
To me, is like a hole.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been a room like this on the ground.
A room because you can't move things. Yeah. You know,
yeah, but it wasn't pleasant. That's for sure.
Pleasant. I was just wondering about visualizing.
Imagine a dungeon. That's, you know.
So was it a small room, 4x4?
Don't know.
Can we?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like green curtains.
And now, it's a little wordy over here. V'gam damo hinei nidrash, and also his blood is being sought out, is being, like they say in the side, avenged. The word v'gam, and also, is an extra word. It doesn't need to be said. It could have just said v'damo hinei nidrash, and his blood is being sought out. The word gam also generally means to include something, and therefore Chazal tell us, and Rashi says it, that Vigam means not only his blood, but there's another person's blood that's also being sought out over here, and that is the blood of Yaakov, meaning that by the pain that we put Yosef through, and the pain that we put our father through, is being sought out over here. Because if you remember, way back when, in Parashas Vayeshev, when we discussed Reuven getting up and trying to save Yosef, what was his primary motivation? It wasn't because he felt that Yosef didn't deserve to be sold. It wasn't because he felt that Yosef was acting properly. He agreed with the brothers that Yosef was a threat. But Reuven's primary concern was the well-being of Yaakov, of his father. He said, how could I let this happen to my father? That was his primary concern. And so Reuven here says, don't just bring up the fact that Yosef was begging to us and we ignored him, but there's someone else who we put through terrible pain and we ignored his pain as well. And that's Yaakov. And therefore, both the blood of Yosef that we didn't actually spill, but we got rid of, and the blood of our father that we didn't actually spill, but we put through great pain, those are the two bloods that are being sought over here, that are being avenged. That's what's happening. That's what Reuven says to them. Now the Torah then tells us, V'heim lo yod'u ki shomea Yosef. They did not know that Yosef was listening. Ki ha-me'lits b'inosam, for the interpreter was between them. Yosef here pulled off one of the oldest tricks in the book, and that is, what's that?
Eavesdropping.
Well, he appointed an interpreter between him and his brothers to make it appear as if he did not know Lashon HaKodesh, he did not know Hebrew. And so he had an interpreter between them.
That's one of his sons, right?
Well, we'll see. Yeah. We'll get to that in a moment, who the interpreter was, etc. We'll get to that. But the reason why he did that was they shouldn't know who he was. But he knew exactly what they were saying, and they talked freely in front of him in Lashon HaKodesh. And it's always dangerous. You got to be careful when you talk in another language thinking that the other person doesn't understand, and then you're shocked or you're embarrassed and you find out that he didn't understand. It's happened to me in my life, and I'm sure it's happened to others as well. Yeah.
I think we should also realize the significance of 22 years for Yaakov Avinu, because he was in such anguish that he could not do, he had no prophecy.
Yeah.
You can't accept Nebuah when you're
right. Right. We mentioned that as well. That's true. Yeah.
What language was Yosef speaking to the
book? I imagine Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine Egyptian.
And they understood.
Well, not necessarily. There was an interpreter. Okay. Now, and they may have understood, but they didn't speak Egyptian to him, so it seems they didn't know Egyptian. So he had the interpreter between them.
They didn't all know the 70
languages? Right. Correct. They didn't all know the 70 languages.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that only Yosef knew it. Yosef got taught the 70 languages, if you recall. So I don't, by the Malach. So I don't know. It seems that they did not know the 70 languages. Then it says in the next pasuk in Chafdal 24, "Vayisov me'alehem vayev," he turned from them and cried. He heard them having charata, having regret, which brought him to tears, which also shows that he wanted reconciliation. He was not trying to hurt them. It brought him to tears that they had regret, but nevertheless, he did not reveal himself at this point. He needs to keep it a secret. Vayashav aleihem, he returned to them. Vayidaber aleihem, and he spoke with them. Torah does not tell us what he spoke to them about. Vayikach meitam es Shimon, and he took from them Shimon. And he locked him up in front of their eyes. So the one person that he takes is Shimon. They did not give him a particular person. He told them, keep one here, and the rest of you go. They did not volunteer any particular person. He takes Shimon. Torah does not tell us whether they could have volunteered a person, whether he would have let them volunteer a person. But he takes Shimon.
Why Shimon?
Okay. Now, let's understand a couple of things over here. This is very important to understand what's happening here and what happened before. And it's going to take a few minutes. The Torah introduces this part of the story at the top of this page with the words, Vayomru ish elachiv. One man said to his brother. Ish elachiv. Vayomru ish elachiv. One man said to his brother. Now the simple meaning is, they all said to each other. It wasn't one person, one specific of the brothers to one specific of the brothers, but rather, they all said one to the other. Vayomru anyway is plural. They all said one to the other. And that's certainly the simple meaning. They were all saying this. But this phrase, Vayomru ish elachiv, they said one to the other, we had before. We had it before. I want you to hold this page on 236 and turn back. What's that?
Remember this. It's in Christian.
Turn back to page 202. Look at Pasuk Yud Tes 19.
Wait a second.
On 202. 19. Yud Tes. Vayomru ish elachiv. And they said one man to the other, Hine bala chalamos halazeba. Behold, this dreamer has come. And the next Pasuk, let's kill him and throw him into one of the pits. And we'll say that a wild animal ate him. And then we'll see what happened to his dreams. Who's talking over there?
People think it's Shimon.
What's that?
I read somewhere that it was Shimon.
Okay. So, by process of elimination, the Mefarshim tell us it was Shimon talking to Levi. Why? Because it can't be Reuven, because Reuven tried to stop them. Reuven was the oldest, and he tried to stop them. It wouldn't have been the younger brothers. They were too young. Your choices are Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Yehuda is the youngest of those three, which would seem to leave him out. Also, Yehuda, later on, has a different plan. And therefore, the Mefarshim tell us that this Ish El Achiv is primarily Shimon talking to Levi. And we know Shimon and Levi have plotted before. When did they plot before?
Shechem.
With Shechem. They're the ones who plotted to kill out Shechem. And they carried it out with the circumcision and the whole thing with killing out Shechem. That was Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi certainly have the capacity to get together and come up with a plan that is that uses strong arm tactics. Shimon and Levi are the ones who are planning the murder of Yosef here. Over here on page 236, where we're up to, again the same phrase, it's inescapable that this is the same two people. It is Shimon talking to Levi. The same two, the same instigator, the same one who was the partner in crime before, they're the ones who articulate this regret. That's a very important factor. It's not that Shimon, who was the instigator before, is the last to regret it now. Shimon is the first to articulate his regret. That's very important. Shimon and Levi need to do the most teshuva, because they're the ones who instigated it, and here they instigate the teshuva. Now, Yosef did not know which brothers were the main ones involved in his sale. How would he know? It all happened before he got there. They had this conversation before he came. Then he came. They threw him into They had this conversation before he came. Reuven heard them have the conversation. Reuven says, "We're not going to kill anybody. Just throw him in the pit." So when he came, they took off his kisson espasim, his tunic, and they threw him in the pit. That's all they did. And that's all he knows. Then Reuven's intention was to come back later and save him. But instead, they sat down to eat bread, and Reuven had to go home. And in the interim, the Yishmaelim passed by, and Yehuda said, "Hey, why don't we sell him?" And they did. So Yosef doesn't know who said what. He just knows that when he came, his clothing was removed, he was thrown in the pit, and then shortly thereafter, he was taken out of the pit and sold into slavery. That's all he knows. He doesn't know which brothers were the instigators, who were the ringleaders. He has no idea. But here, for the first time, Yosef gets a glimpse into what the conversation was 22 years earlier. Because he hears Shimon say to Levi, you know, we really didn't do the right thing. And Yosef understands, if they're feeling so guilty, they must have been part of the ringleaders. And he then hears Reuven say, I told you not to do that. And they don't deny it. Now everything clicks in Yosef's mind. It wasn't Reuven. Remember, he didn't know. For 22 years, he doesn't know. Was it Reuven? Was it Shimon? Was it Levi? Was it Yehuda? Who were the ringleaders? He doesn't know. Yosef's pain towards his brothers, he doesn't know.
Yeah, but even before he heard this harata, this guilt, how did he know to lock up Shimon?
So he didn't yet.
Well, didn't he already lock him up?
No.
Oh.
That's about to show you. He doesn't say which brother he's going to keep until he hears this confession. He only said, I'm going to keep one of you. He didn't say which one. He said, I'm going to send one of you home and keep the rest of you. Didn't say which one.
No, he said,
then he locked them up.
Send all of you home.
First he said, I'm going to send one home and keep nine.
Right.
Then he locked them up for 3 days.
Right.
Then he says, I changed my mind. I'll send nine of you home and keep one. And now they start to talk. And he, who can understand what they're saying and they don't realize it, he knows what they're saying. And now he knows which brother to keep. Yosef needed this. He needed to get them to talk because he needed more information. Yosef was missing some of the crucial parts of the story because he wasn't there when it happened. And so now he's got a much better picture. It wasn't Reuven. Reuven is clean. Shimon and Levi, it was there. Those were the main two. And he knows his brothers. And he knows he's got to take Shimon. The Mefarshim say, Rashi tells us, that why Shimon? Either to separate him from Levi, because the two of them together could plot. He knows firsthand what can happen from Shechem, and also for what happened to him. So it's either that, or because Shimon himself has to be separate. It's not because of Shimon and Levi, it's just Shimon himself could make all kinds of trouble. So he takes Shimon. Shimon's the one who he isolates. It has to be Shimon. But he discovers that it has to be Shimon from listening carefully to the brothers. Again, Yosef's plan is going exactly the way he wants it to go. He's getting the information he needs. And this was a real, you can imagine, this was a gamble. When he said, I'll keep one and send nine. And he doesn't know which one to keep. And he's waiting for some information here. He's waiting to hear something that he can pounce on. And he got it. When they said this, Shimon's the one.
You would think they would have this conversation when they were within 3 days, because then they were really having the fear.
Right.
Maybe they weren't together.
It seems like they were all together, because he says, Beit
Mishmar.
Well, it doesn't say how big it was. It seems like, and it could be he had people, that he had his son there listening in the whole time. Could be he had a little device there, you know, whatever. Saying could be he had some way of eavesdropping during that time. But he's waiting, he's trying to figure out what he's trying to get as much information as he can. So here he got the information.
But how did he actually, because of the interpreter, how is he hearing his brother?
He's right there. He's standing there.
Yeah. They're speaking. For 3 days?
No. I don't know. I don't know if anybody was there for 3 days. I don't know. But he's looking for information. And here he got them by changing the story from nine staying and one going home and then switching to one staying and nine going home. He's gotten them, he's loosened their tongues a little bit. And they start to talk. And now they talk enough that he gets the information he's looking for.
Well, so did all of the brothers remove the clothing and throw in the pit?
I don't know. It seems that way. The way it's described in the story before.
Not just Shimon.
No, it seems like it was everybody. I mean, they all did the sin. They're all held accountable.
Even Yehuda. Mm-hmm.
Yehuda, for sure.
world?
Yehuda for sure. The question is whether why Reuven is also implicated. That's the question. We asked this back then, because if Reuven really wanted to save him, it's really only 9 brothers, not 10, which is a fair question. Yeah.
I guess we have known Yosef HaTzadik because he could have been very revengeful with his brothers for such a long time.
You're right. That's not why he gets named Yosef. Yosef HaTzadik is because he resisted the wife of Potiphar. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. He could have taken revenge over here, and he doesn't. Right. There's no question that this is a Yosef who has grown far beyond his years. This is a much different Yosef than we met in the beginning of Parashas Vayeshev when he had the whole problem with his brothers. This is a Yosef who has grown and become a much more developed and refined person. That's who this Yosef is.
If he's sending 9 home and keeping Shimon, and he knows how his brothers treated him, so why doesn't he think that perhaps maybe they won't come back to Shimon?
That's part of the test. That's exactly right. See, he's trying to set it up to see what's going to happen over here. Have the brothers, have they repented? Okay. Right? This is what he's trying to do. Keep one back and see how they react. And then later, when he's going to actually threaten to keep Binyamin, that's going to be even more. Right? Mm-hmm. Right now, it's just Shimon. But he's trying to get Binyamin down here, and then he's really going to set them to the test. Because with keeping Shimon, it was a shock. But when it's going to be Binyamin, when he knows that they have guaranteed their father to bring him home, so now, let's see what happens. So this is that when we get to that, we're going to see. That's what he's orchestrating. He's building up to it, one thing at a time. The interpreter, as was already mentioned, the interpreter, the Medrash says, was his son Menashe. He had 2 sons, Menashe and Ephraim. Menashe is the older son. Ephraim is the younger son. Menashe is the one who Yosef grooms as his successor. I don't mean successor as viceroy of Egypt, but the one who will take over whatever he'll be the leader of the family after Yosef passes away, which is what you would expect. Menashe is the oldest, and it makes sense that the Bechor, the oldest one, is the one who is groomed to take over the family business. He's the one who's going to be the head of the household after Yosef passes away. Yosef grooms Menashe. Later on in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov offers the brachos to Menashe and to Ephraim, and he switches his hands and gives Ephraim the better bracha, part of what's happening over there is that Yosef had groomed Menashe to be the leader of his children, and Yaakov says, no, it's going to be Ephraim. So we'll talk about that further when we get there. We're going to show where the different places where you see that Yosef grooms Menashe for the job, not Ephraim. Here you see it first. The Medrash tells us that that the interpreter was Menashe.
How old is Menashe?
I don't know. 7? He's got to be young. He's got to be young because he only married Asnas 9 years ago. Right. That's right. So that's a good point. He's young. As we'll see later, he was quite powerful.
Why would the brothers even see this little kid as an interpreter? I mean,
right.
How would this
right.
kid know the language?
Well, here's really the catch. Why does he need Menashe? Why not just take an Egyptian?
They don't know Hebrew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't know Lashon Kodesh. Who knows Lashon Kodesh? Even Paro didn't know Lashon Kodesh.
That's right.
So how do you find someone who knows Hebrew? Now, this should have caused the brothers some suspicion. How does this kid know Hebrew? He's not Yosef. He's much too young to be Yosef. See, if he would have gotten someone older, they might have started to think, maybe this is Yosef, maybe it's a friend of him, but it's a kid. How does this kid know Hebrew? This was very troublesome. The brothers still don't catch on. They don't catch on, even though you've got someone here who speaks Hebrew, but it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that. Yeah.
Wouldn't he also not want, even if it was an Egyptian who knew Hebrew, he wouldn't want because he wouldn't have a Busha for his brothers. He wouldn't
That is true. But the fact is, there was nobody else. But it goes beyond that.
And does Menashe know that these are his brothers?
I think he does.
He's keeping it clear.
Yeah. No, I think Menashe's in on the whole thing. That's what I assume. But it goes beyond that. The Medrash tells us that when he wanted to take Shimon and keep him, Yosef had a problem. Because you can threaten all you want, but when you actually want to carry it out, how are you going to actually grab Shimon? Shimon is an extremely powerful person. Remember, Shimon and Levi single-handedly wiped out all the male population of Shechem. Now, I understand that they were in pain because they had just circumcised themselves. It's still not an easy thing to do. It still requires a great deal of strength. Shimon and Levi were very, very powerful. All the brothers were very, very powerful. How do you get this person? So the Medrash tells us, now this Medrash is likely an exaggeration. With Midrashim, sometimes it's hard to tell how much of it is literal and how much of it is an exaggeration. But even if it's an exaggeration, you'll get the point of the Medrash. The Medrash says that Yosef, knowing that it was going to be a real task to confine Shimon, sent for 70 Egyptian soldiers to come. I'm sure the number 70 is not insignificant. With chains, and then he commanded them, put the chains around Shimon. The Medrash says that as they approached Shimon, Shimon yelled out, he growled at them, and they all fell dead. Now, you know, does it have to be exactly that? Whatever it is, the Medrash is trying to tell us that a large amount of people tried to subdue Shimon, and he killed all of them. They couldn't get near him. How do you grab them, a man like that? So then Yosef said to Menashe, go and subdue Shimon. Now Menashe is young. So Menashe went and gave Shimon a good zetz. Yeah, a good clap. Right? Gave him a good one. And it hurt. And Shimon said, this clap, this hit, comes from the house of Yaakov. It was too powerful. Shimon. That's what the Medrash says. Now, again, do we take this literally? You know, how much of it is literal? Did he actually hit him? Whatever it is, the Medrash is trying to tell us they couldn't subdue Shimon until Menashe got involved. And when Menashe got involved, they were able to subdue Shimon. It doesn't say that Shimon was tackled by Menashe and locked in chains. It says that Menashe hit Shimon and Shimon said, this comes from Yaakov's house. It seems that once Menashe hit Shimon, Shimon gave up the fight. He didn't resist anymore. That's what it seems. As opposed to, they actually tussled and Menashe got him in a headlock and, you know, put him in chains. As opposed to that, it seems that Menashe just hit him once, and Shimon was shocked and said, this has got to be from Yaakov's house. And with that, he stopped. Mm-hmm. Now, wow. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Again, why did it raise his suspicions? How does this kid know Hebrew, and he has the power of the household of Yaakov? Why didn't that raise suspicion? And why does that get him to stop fighting? It's still a kid. I would imagine Shimon was still stronger than Menashe. And he had 9 other brothers who could have joined in and you know, it's just Menashe.
Did he realize that maybe it was made from Hashem?
Okay. So it seems then that, remember, they're having charata, they're having regret. That this pain, this anguish is happening to us. Why? Because of what we put our brother through. Or maybe not. You still have to put in your own effort. You don't let yourself be locked up. Even if the government comes and says, okay, we're going to lock you up, and you say, you know, I deserve it because I locked someone up a while ago. You don't then say, okay, go ahead. Right? You resist, right? Okay, so in America today, you would resist with a lawyer. But I'm saying, you don't just let it happen. Unless you can say for certain that this is God's plan, like with the case of the 10 martyrs, when Rabbi Shmuel called and go, what were they going to do? You know, the Roman general said, I'm going to kill all of you. So what do they? Then Rabbi Shmuel goes upstairs and finds out that yeah, you're meant to be killed. And if they would have come down and said, no, you're not supposed to be killed, what would they have done? Well, then they would have tried to get out of it. They would have tried to run away. They would have tried to bargain for their lives. They would have tried to ransom themselves. They would have tried some way of getting out of it. But because Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol said, no, this is the decree of God, they accepted it. How do the brothers know for certain that this is the decree of God? Because some Egyptians tried to put chains around Shimon? Why should that prove anything? Why should it? Because some, so this hedonistic society, these idolaters, they try to put chains around Shimon? Who are they? So that's not going to make Shimon or the other brothers convinced that this is certainly from God. But then, when Shimon gets struck by someone who demonstrates the power of Yaakov's house, he doesn't interpret this as, hey, this kid is related to me. That's not his first thought, which in fact he is. This kid is his nephew. But that's not his first thought. His first thought is, this is a sign from God. If this kid can hit me the way that Yaakov's family can hit, this is God sending the hand of Yosef against me. He discerns in that punch, or that slap, whatever it is that he got, that was Yosef punching me back. And he says, okay. And he stops fighting. He lets them put the chains around him. And he gets locked up. With that, he ceases to resist. Because he sees it as a sign from God. And the fascinating thing is, he was so close to the truth. It was Yosef's fist. It was Yosef's son. But he doesn't make that connection. He's thinking, this is some Egyptian who God gave a superhuman power to in order to teach me a lesson, in order to give me the message that this is in fact the way I'm supposed to be. This is divinely decreed. I'm supposed to be locked up right now and let it happen. And then so he did. That's how he interprets it. Now it doesn't yet explain why he didn't get suspicious from the fact that this kid could speak Hebrew. Because that's still an open question. I don't know if we're going to have a satisfactory answer for that or not. We'll see down the line. Because it's not the last time he's going to use an interpreter. So we'll see as we move along.
Maybe they just knew he was some kid who his brothers hated him and he was sold to the Egyptian. What did she think?
Is it someone else who got sold to heaven?
Maybe it was just he assumed it was some little kid whose brothers hated him and was sold to the Egyptian.
But how do you know Hebrew?
He was a Jewish kid sold.
What other Jewish kid is there?
In Yeshiva Shimon Eber, where Yaakov learned, it had to have been Hebrew knowledge present.
Yeah.
What's his name? Malchi Tzedek. There could have been some possible way.
Yeah, there were others who seemed to know Hebrew, but not. It wasn't widespread.
Right.
It wasn't widespread. The fact that Paro didn't know it is telling, because Paro knew all other languages.
Right.
So it wasn't something readily available.
Okay.
So that's still an open question. But this is the message that Shimon is getting, and therefore he ceases and lets it go. Now, we're going to stop here. We're up to Pasuk Chaf Hei 25. Mrs. Kaiser will tell us next week. It's on page 236 and verse 25. However, I want you to remember that we're coming out that Ish El Achiv, one man to his brother, is Shimon to Levi. And Shimon has been locked up. But that still leaves Levi. And that's going to be a significant factor when we talk next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.